Hi, and welcome to the Learn to Code with Me podcast. Today, we'll be learning about choosing the best laptop for you after this quick word about how you can support the show. Interview Cake is an online resource that helps you prep for interviews so you can land your dream job in tech. To find out more and get 20% off, go to learntocodewith.me/cake. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/cake. I hear every day from listeners like you how much value you get from the show, but each episode takes over 5 hours to produce. To keep putting out high-quality interviews, I'd like to invite you to support the podcast for as little as a few dollars a month. To find out more, go to learntocodewith.me/pledge. Hey, listeners. In today's episode, I talk with Forrest Knight. Forrest is a full-time software engineer and part-time YouTuber. He studied computer science at college, and he's here today to share his advice on choosing the best laptop for programming. You'll learn which laptop to buy if you're learning to code, which one to buy if you're also doing more demanding tasks like gaming, everything you need to know about replacing, repairing, and updating your hardware, and what key terms like CPU, RAM, and SSD mean. Let's get into the interview. Hey, Forrest. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to talk to you today, but as I just said while we were getting ready to record, I am a little bit nervous because this is the first time ever out of like almost 100 episodes that I'm talking to someone about something that's hardware related, what laptop to buy when you're figuring out what kind of laptop to buy if you're learning to code. And this is a question that I get asked all the time from people writing in, and by no means am I an expert on this. So I'm just really happy to have someone who has researched this to come on and from your own experience and discuss it. But before we get into all that, could you tell us a bit more about yourself and your background in tech?
Sure. So I could really go all the way back to when I was a toddler, you know, growing up, but I'm just going to go back to college days because that's really when I delved into it to the point where I am today. And that is, I went to college for computer science. I graduated with a computer science degree last May. And in that same month, I got a job as a software engineer. So obviously, computers, laptops have been a big part of this whole entire career for me.
Nice. So one of the things that struck me as really interesting when I was researching this topic was how little content there actually was online about determining which computer or laptop to buy to code on. Mm-hmm. Like, there was stuff, don't get me wrong, and there were lots of like listicle articles that had these whole comparison charts, but it really wasn't geared towards someone who was new and getting started. And how I ended up coming across you and your work was on your YouTube channel, where you had this entire video called Best Laptops for Computer Science Students. And for those listening, we'll definitely link up to it in the show notes of this episode. Awesome. And I just want to know, like, what made you want to make a video about this topic to begin with?
So I get asked this question all the time because my audience is a lot of those people who are aspiring computer science students or aspiring software engineers, or they are currently. And since this question was asked all the time, I figured I'd address it in a video where I can go into a lot more detail about it than I would in a comment.
Got it. That makes sense. So could you tell us about like what you talk about in it and what you recommend in the video?
Yeah, in the video, I really talk about my personal experiences because, as you mentioned, there are a lot of like lists out there of, you know, what could be the best coding laptop. I just talk about what I find to be the best coding laptop for me and or computer science laptop, whatever. It's the same thing, really. And for me, it was my MacBook Pro because Macs run Mac OS, and that is Unix-based, and that's very popular within computer science software engineering realm, of course. And I also talk about the Dell XPS laptops just because I think that's a very solid, good laptop for the price and what it offers. That's what I've recommended to my brother and countless other people. But one of the main points I try to touch on is get a laptop that's catered towards you and what you like to do. If you're only focused on coding, then you can get by with one of those $400 or $500 laptops, whether it's, you know, a few years old or it's a Lenovo ThinkPad. So I know some are more expensive than $500, but you can get some cheap ThinkPads as well. And if you like to game, but you also want to be a computer science student or software engineer, then get a gaming laptop, because those laptops will be able to code as well. So I just try to encourage people to do a bit more research based on what they want and what their needs are. Try to think about everything that they'll be using the laptop for and get the laptop for all of those reasons.
So what is a gaming laptop exactly?
So gaming laptop would be something created like by MSI. That's a company that'll create graphics cards or whatever, and they have laptops. It's basically a beefier laptop that generally has a better processor, a better RAM, a graphics card in order to optimally run video games.
Makes sense. And I never knew this, but my monitor apparently is really good for gaming. I'm not a gamer, clearly by that last question, but at the company I was working at before, all of the people on the tech team, we all had the same monitor, and I don't know who chose it. He must have been a gamer, I'm assuming. Yeah, because I remember trying to find like an output or cord to like go to my Mac, and I had to order it specially online because whatever it was, they didn't even have at the Apple store.
Very interesting. What?
Yeah, I'd have to look it up to get the exact cord. Oh man, I would, and then I have to use a special converter now because I have the newer MacBook.
That's always fun.
Yeah, it's like I used to keep buying more things, I feel like, to use. So then I have to buy this like $40 converter on top of the other thing. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is just adding up. But I love the monitor so much because the graphics were so great and it's relatively affordable. So I went with that. But
very nice.
Yeah. So okay, so you mentioned like catering to what works for you and what you like to do. So what if someone, you know, they're not a gamer, they only really use their laptop right now, maybe just for like social media or email and just like kind of like basic things, nothing too crazy. What should they think about then, like in that case?
If they're just a casual user who wants to code?
Yeah.
So I guess that heavily depends on your budget. If you're really budget conscious and you want to get something cheap, one of those Lenovo ThinkPads, or I actually use a Dell Inspiron at my software engineering job. So obviously that does the job for me, and you can get those for fairly cheap. I would just say get whatever laptop you can to actually get you started to code. It's less about the laptop. Sure, you need maybe minimum specs. In my humble opinion, that would be maybe like a newer, within the past four generations of Intel core processors, like an i5. That's essentially what I have in my computer tower, and that can code, and a minimum of 8 gigabytes of RAM. In terms of the company or the actual laptop, that's really up to whoever. If you really want to just be directed in one area, I'd say look at Lenovo, because a lot of my audience tend to use those because they're generally on the cheaper side, or look at Dell because I've always liked Dell.
So you mentioned a few terms just a second ago, like gigabytes, RAM, core processor, I think was another.
Yes.
Could you just like briefly explain what some of those things are?
So the core processor, that's a CPU. That's essentially what'll run all of your tasks. And there's a lot of different levels of that. And I would just recommend a minimum of i5. And then when it comes to your RAM, I would recommend a minimum of 8 gigabytes, but you can get by with 4 gigabytes. A lot of other computers are running like 16 or 32 or 64 or beyond. And what the RAM does, it's random access memory. And that is essentially when you are running a particular program, whether that be a coding program or a video game or Google Chrome, that is where the information that you're using is stored in the RAM. And then if you save that, that's when that stuff will get saved onto your main storage. So that's essentially where all of your stuff runs.
I'm like kind of switching gears here, but sure. This makes me think of it. So now there's all these cloud storage solutions, right? So, I mean, there's like AWS, but then even if you're just doing like doc stuff, like Google Docs, like my entire life is on Google Docs, and I also use Dropbox. Does it really matter like how much local storage you have if you're using so many of these cloud things that save it all there?
I guess in terms of your storage. Not necessarily, as long as your local storage has a comfortable 25%. So like if you have a 250 gigabyte hardware, a storage, then you want to have like at least 40 to 50 gigabytes of open storage in order to have your computer run optimally. But in terms of RAM, it really heavily depends on what programs you're running. So if you're running Premiere Pro, which Adobe Premiere Pro is what I use to edit my YouTube videos, that needs a decent amount of RAM. And then when I export that, regardless of where I'm exporting it to, it could be up to the cloud, it could be to an external hard drive like I normally do, the RAM is still necessary to make sure everything runs smoothly.
Right. So you're really interesting because you're not only like a software engineer, but you also do a lot of video editing. And do you do any design?
I do a little bit of design. I work with Adobe XD, Adobe Experience Design, because I have the Adobe Creative Cloud. And since that was added in, I think maybe the beginning of 2017 or maybe somewhere in 2016 when I first started, getting Adobe Creative Cloud and doing all of that, I figured I'd use it. I use that for mobile app design, web design, although I don't do much web design. You can use it for that. It's essentially like Sketch or Envision Studio, which I think is relatively new. And I do use that for some design. And I've used Illustrator, but that's not really my cup of tea.
So if someone is maybe, they're starting out and they're not exactly sure what direction they want to take, but they do think something down the design route could interest them. So maybe product design or UX design or web design or what have you. Are there any considerations a person should make when it comes to a computer to buy for doing design work that's different than doing software engineering?
I still think that it'll be able to take the same workload if you're doing that type of work. I mean, if you're doing 3D rendering or some heavy, heavy video editing, but then that's kind of a different ballpark. That's more than what I do. So if you're just kind of focused on design, whether that is web design with HTML, CSS and whatnot, or if that's design with one of these programs where you're essentially just making a mock-up in order to go off of to create your website or your iOS application, I think the specs would be similar, just the same minimums as I mentioned earlier.
And then for someone buying a laptop, do you have any advice on like where to look or maybe where not to buy one from?
Where not to buy one? I'm not too sure. I try to stay away from anywhere like that.
I'm thinking like Craigslist, because sometimes I get tempted to buy like a TV. I really want a new TV on Craigslist. And then I'm like, I don't know if I should buy an electronic on Craigslist, because who knows how well it's going to work once you bring it home.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. So in terms of laptops, my main thing is that I haven't bought a laptop in a long time. As mentioned, I still use a mid-2012 MacBook Pro. And then I have a 3 to 4 year old desktop computer that I built, but I have been keeping up to date and my friends have been asking for laptops and whatnot. And of course I'm still in the know about it. And they just go the typical route, whether that be straight from the website like Dell, or maybe that be Best Buy or Amazon is always a good one, but sometimes they have a little bit too many options. The cool thing about the native website on, like if you want to order it online, like let's say Dell.com, if that's their URL, you can actually go through and, you know, if you need X amount of storage, you can get X amount of storage. If you need X amount of RAM, or if you want to choose a CPU, you essentially can customize your laptop instead of going on Amazon. And it's a little bit more confusing to do that. So I would just recommend ordering it from the regular avenues. As mentioned, in terms of somewhere like Craigslist, I've used Craigslist a lot. Don't get me wrong. I used to make money on Craigslist buying and selling stuff just for fun in high school to have, you know, some extra money, but I've never bought a laptop, so I can't really say much about it.
Yeah. I feel like it's definitely a risk when you buy from some kind of a place like Craigslist, or I know there's other apps now like Letgo and the Facebook Marketplace. I haven't bought electronics from there either, but yeah, as you said, it feels like it's a lot safer to go down a more traditional route.
Yeah, in terms of the hardware especially, but there's also that concern of you're meeting a random person somewhere So if anyone ever does buy anything off Craigslist or sells anything on Craigslist, meet in a public, busy place. just a tip.
Yeah, or have someone or more than one person maybe go with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you, sidebar, but in I live in New York and I always am on Craigslist looking at furniture, which is, you know, much different than buying electronic. And I have bought pieces of furniture, but yeah, I've definitely never gone alone. Or I've looked the person up on LinkedIn and made sure like they're like real or, you know, whatever
before. Yeah, always do your background check.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So you mentioned a little bit ago that you've had your computer since 2012.
Yeah.
How have you been able to like maintain one for that long? Because I think I got one. I feel kind of guilty because I feel like I just got a new one and I really, my other one really wasn't that old, but it was so slow. It was just like hard to use.
Well, see, that's what I was going to mention when you're talking about having all these like dongles or adapters. I was going to say you could avoid that problem by just keeping a really old laptop and not worrying about it. But then you run into other problems. So I have the mid 2012 MacBook Pro, and that has an i7 CPU. So that's good. And the generation is old, of course. I don't even know, maybe the fourth generation Intel processor. And then it has 8 gigabytes of RAM. So that's good. That's what I would, well, I mean, I still create apps on there. So obviously it does the job. Plus that's old RAM. So that's why I say specs, like, as long as you have these minimums, you should be good. Because if I'm able to work on a what now 6.5 year old laptop, then anything within the past 2 years, you should be fine on. The one main thing that I did with my MacBook Pro is I ordered a 500 gigabyte SSD, which is solid state drive, and replaced my hard disk drive. Because, you know, if you have a laptop and you hear like a disk spinning as if you inserted a CD, that would be a disk drive spinning around. And if you bump it, it could mess something up that's running. A solid state drive, it's essentially flash storage. So instead of spinning on a disk to try to find what it needs to find, it essentially finds it at a snap of a finger. And that was my main replacement and update to that laptop, which really allowed it to continue going on. To put in perspective, it took about, I don't know, I have a video on it somewhere, but like, let's say like 3 to 5 minutes from shutdown to boot up. Now it takes like 30 seconds. So it made quite the difference.
Wow. And I, again, all this stuff is like so new to me, but how much does something like that cost? Like the SSD that you put in?
So it's just getting cheaper and cheaper as years go on, which I'm very happy about. But then again, a lot of things are taking up more and more storage. So you have to spend more money for more storage. But the 500 gigabyte at the time, I think I spent maybe 160, if I recall correctly, $160. But I think you can get down for it's a Samsung 850 Evo solid state drive. And I think it's around closer to $100 than 160, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. And that's definitely a lot less than a new Mac computer.
Definitely. And I can also take it out if I ever got a new one and use it as an external hard drive or put it into my PC or something. So it's an update that isn't just, you know, custom to that. If I wanted to, I could take it out, wipe the whole thing and use it in another computer.
So did you install this, or I guess if that's the right word, install yourself?
Yeah, I did. I like doing that.
So is that... So for someone who maybe doesn't like doing that or is nervous they're going to like mess, because that would be my biggest fear. I'm like, oh God, what if I like just like break the whole thing because I'm clumsy and I like screw the wrong thing or something. Is there I guess there's places locally where computer repair places that can maybe bring it.
Yeah.
Or just watch a lot of YouTube videos and gain the confidence in doing it.
Yeah, that's what I do. I look at YouTube videos for anything from, you know, figuring out what's squeaking in my car and how to replace like my pulley like I have in my car before, or replacing a hard drive in a laptop. But if you are really worried about it and just don't want to mess with it, then you would be spending for more money for the service, and you could go to a local computer fix-it shop, or, you know, someone like Geek Squad at Best Buy or one of those types of electronic stores could probably fix it for you, but obviously you're going to be paying more for the name brand, you know, like Geek Squad, Best Buy, they're going to cost more most likely than your local shop.
And have you ever replaced the battery in the computer that you've been using?
I have not. I actually have another laptop that is sitting on a shelf. It's I think it's an HP laptop, EliteBook, I think, if I recall correctly. It's from my old job. But that doesn't turn on unless it's plugged in because the battery's dead. But in terms of MacBook Pro, it's a little bit different. But no, I've never done it.
Sit tight, podcast listeners. We're taking a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. One of my all-time favorite resources for techies is Interview Cake, a tool that helps you practice technical interview questions so you can land your first or next job in tech. When you join Interview Cake, you get over 50 hours of technical interview practice questions. The questions cover a range of different languages, including Java, Python, and Ruby. You get hints to help you through the process and walkthroughs of the answers you don't understand. Interview Cake has helped people land jobs at Google, Amazon, Apple, and other top companies. What's more, the guys at Interview Cake are so confident that they'll be able to help you that if you don't get the job you go for, they'll give you your money back. You either get a life-changing job or a complete refund. There's seriously nothing to lose. And I've managed to get 20% off the price for Learn to Code With Me podcast listeners via my affiliate link. Just go to learntocodewith.me/cake and the discount will be automatically applied. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/cake. Every day I hear from listeners who tell me how this podcast gave them the confidence to keep learning to code, how a guest's advice helped them land a job in tech, or how just listening to the show gave them the understanding they needed to feel comfortable talking with others about technology. If you find the show valuable and would like it to continue well into the future, please consider supporting the podcast on Patreon. For as little as a few dollars per month, you'll get access to behind-the-scenes information about upcoming episodes and be able to have a say over the topics we cover. And if you'd like to pledge more than that, there are even more goodies that are available for you as a backer. For example, a free copy of my LinkedIn ebook, The 5-Day LinkedIn Crash Course, access to my list of special discount coupons for courses and services that I love, and more. Learn more about everything that we have on Patreon and pledge your support at learntocodewith.me/pledge. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/pledge. Yeah, I feel like this is another thing I feel sort of guilty about, a story I feel guilty about sharing, but I have two computers now. One I never use, or it's kind of like a backup one, and then my newer one that I got several months ago. And one of the big things that made me get a new computer was that my battery need to be replaced. And if I went through the Apple store, and mind you, I live in Manhattan. So this is like, there's literally a 24-hour Apple store in Times Square. Like, that's, you could wild. Go there. I actually know somebody who used to work there. And she liked the overnight shifts because she worked on, not the Geek, whatever their equivalent of the Geek Squad, which, sure, I'm blanking on.
Like, Apple Care, maybe? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, they had, okay, Apple Care 24 hours.
That's so, like, nice.
And she actually told me that, and this is shocking, but the people who would come in a lot at night were a lot of like celebrities or like, like NBA players or like people maybe that want to keep a low profile, and like, which is crazy that they're going to get their iPhone fixed, but maybe, I don't know, they just wanted to and not send an assistant. But in any event, she said she really liked those shifts because it was really quiet, but there was like three main kinds of people that would come in.
That's awesome.
Like, you
can
probably imagine, like, yeah, like the different people that would come in at 4 a.m., like, right, because they're, you know, working on an essay at college and their computer crashed and they're freaking out or something. But anyway, so I went there and they said it would take like a week for me to send my laptop away, for them to change the battery and then give it back to me. It could have been up to even 10 days, I think. And I was like, I can't go without my computer for 10 days. So then I found another place in the city that could have repaired it, and it could have taken a day. But because of the type of computer that I had, which is maybe like a 2012 MacBook Pro, and da 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 da, the part, the this, the service, all of this, it would have come out, I think, to be like $500. And at that point, I was like, well, yeah, maybe I should just get a new computer and just save this one because, yeah, I just can't believe there's not like a better solution for the battery repair. And I know some computers, it's easier to change your battery than others. But I think the one that mine was, it's like not easy to change, like if a person wanted to do it themselves.
Yeah. And that's in yours was a Apple computer.
Yeah. It was Yeah.
See, that's the thing with Apple products. I remember way back when I had a flip phone, you know, I went from a flip phone where you could take the battery out to turn it off or to do whatever to an iPhone. They have no removable battery. That was my first experience with something like iPhone where they don't let you customize the hardware at all. And even now in their laptops or even in their computers, a lot of like the RAM, the stuff is soldered on. You can't replace a lot of the items within that. It's essentially you buy what you need now and either you take it in and pay, you know, $500 to get it updated or you buy a new one. And that's one of my main gripes with Apple. I do like Apple. I'm a bit biased since one of my main things has been iOS development. So of course I'm going to be running my Mac OS, but that's one thing with Apple that I just can't wrap my head around.
Yeah, it's pretty wild because they do make it so hard. It's like a week. Like I couldn't believe. Yeah. Like, I was like, I can't not use have a computer at all. Like,
this is my business. I need to keep this running.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I can't even imagine a day like without my computer. No, I can't either. Even unless I'm like on vacation or something, but being in like the, you know, real world, I can't imagine even going, you know, yeah, a day would be really difficult. But I think what you mentioned is also something good for people to keep in mind, like if they want to do any kind of tinkering or customization, that especially the newer Apples, it's basically impossible to do that.
Yeah.
So if a person's interested in building their own computer or doing all that, it may not be a great option for them.
Yeah.
I'm going to change a little bit, still about computers, but sure. You were also mentioning something earlier about the disk and the noise and whatever. And then it just made me think, because even on my new MacBook Pro, which again, I got a few months ago, there are times when I'm running certain applications, and this is actually, it only really happens with audio or video, where it gets really loud. Like my computer's like buzzing. What's that? Do you have an answer for that? Do you know what that is? Because I'm like, how is a really new computer doing this?
That's under a heavy workload.
Yeah.
That's probably your fans trying to cool off the insides of your computer. That's what I would guess.
Right.
Your fans are spinning as fast as possible, trying to blow as much air through in order to make sure everything stays cool and not overheat.
But is there a way for that to, like, is there any way to, like, to avoid that from happening? Like, if I had more, I don't know, like, space on my computer or something, or more, it was more powerful?
I'm not sure. Maybe. I'm not sure exactly how it's set up for the fans to work. That's a very interesting question. Because, of course, if you have lower, I feel like if you have lower specs, then it's easier to make your computer have a heavier workload, because otherwise it could be a regular workload on a high-end computer, like a really good computer, and your fans wouldn't be working as hard because the workload wouldn't be as heavy. So I guess that would kind of go hand in hand with better the computer, the less frequent it'll overheat, I guess. I don't know. That's just an assumption. Don't quote me on that, please.
Yeah. I am also just thinking about some people I know that do a lot of the video stuff in particular, where they will, I'm actually thinking of someone I used to work with where her computer, they had to get her a new one because she ended up doing a lot of video work and her computer would just like crash. And this was again, brand new Apple like computer. Yeah. And it would just crash and it was crazy. And where I used to work, and she ended up getting a new one, got like a very powerful, like whatever, probably the highest specs you could get of Apple. And then it was totally fine. But it is wild. Just like the spectrum of these laptops, you know, cause I don't know how many Apple will release, but you know, they have like four or something different ones with the different kind of specs, from the lowest, which is the cheapest, to the best, which can be like so much more expensive though.
Yeah. You could buy few used cars for that price.
Yeah. It's insane. But for me, I mean, I don't have a car, so I use my laptop. I use my laptop all the time. So I'm like, okay, this is an investment, and you know, I really need this. And I did go with a bit better specs this time around because I always ran out of storage space on my last computer. So yeah. I was like, I don't want that from happening. But anyway, I would love to talk real quick about your YouTube channel, if you don't mind, and sure. like how you got into that. Cause I know there's people listening that really want to like help share their knowledge as they're learning to code. And I think it's awesome that you have such like an active YouTube channel. When did you start that?
I started it in the summer of 2016, towards the end, I think in August, if I recall correctly.
And it's grown like quite a lot, or you have a large following there.
I appreciate that. Yeah. We passed 40,000 subscribers in December, just
wow.
a couple weeks ago.
And how often are you putting out new videos there?
So for me, it's either, it really depends. Some weeks, none. Other weeks, three. So I tried to average a single video per week in 2018. I think I got maybe like mid 40s. I didn't quite hit that 52 video mark, which I wish I would have, but you know, it is what it is at this point. Now I could just move forward. And that's essentially the consistency. I had one whole month of May that I didn't upload a single video simply because I got married, I graduated, went on my honeymoon, and I started a new job. So I had a little bit going on that month, and I hoped my subscribers could understand.
So yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. And then it's crazy how the YouTube channel has evolved to what it is today, because I started off just making videos, didn't really know what I wanted to make videos about, but I just wanted to make videos. And this was when I was a computer science student. And then I decided I'm going to track my iOS development journey. I coined it as iDev journey because I was learning iOS development for the second time because I forgot everything from before. And then I was just essentially tracking that whole entire journey on my YouTube channel. And one thing led to another. I uploaded a few computer science related videos, and those are some videos that really caught towards the end of 2017. And essentially, that propelled me into making more and more videos about computer science, because I remember when I first was interested in computer science, just like many people right now listening are either interested in computer science or software development, you have so many questions. And since I've been there, I figure it's wise of me and helpful of me to answer a lot of these questions that I knew I had back then based on my personal experiences that I've gone through. And to put in perspective, at the beginning of 2017, I had 3,000 subscribers. I didn't publicly announce my goal because it's kind of like a vanity metric. My one goal was to upload 52 videos, one video a week. But in my mind, for subscribers, my goal was to have 10,000 subscribers by the end of 2018. And as you can see, the computer science area, me sharing my experiences, really allowed me to grow faster than I ever could have dreamed.
Wow. And then looking ahead for 2019, what are your plans? Like, are you still going to try to put out like a video every week? And is it still going to be about the computer science topics or something else?
Yeah, that's the goal. I do have this one series that I am about to begin. And it's kind of like essentially what I'm working on. Kind of like, you know, back when I made the iDev journey, which tracked my iOS development journey. I want to track my personal development journey with whatever I work on this year. And I kind of, in my mind, I don't think it'll play out this way, but I'm going to say it here anyway. In my mind, it'll ideally be, let's say, like every Tuesday or every other Tuesday, I upload part of that series, which is kind of like what I just said of what I'm working on, and a little bit more, a deeper look into what's going on in my life, whatnot. I think that'd be fun to look back on in 5 years and whatnot, kind of like a vlog series, if you will, like those typical daily vloggers and whatnot, but weekly or biweekly. And then I would like to keep my computer science related, software engineering related topic videos or tutorials every Friday. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but then again, this is my very first year ever of having a foreseeable consistent schedule. Instead of worrying about what classes I'm taking or what job I'll be working, I know I'll be working as a software engineer at the current company at which I work for this whole entire year, at least I hope so. And then I know my hours, so it's easier to set a schedule like that. So that's kind of what's going on this year, hopefully.
Nice. I could ask you like a lot more questions about that because I think it's really interesting. So, but just like super quick. So do you plan out all the topics like far in advance that you're going to make?
Yeah, I use Trello board, which is very good for me for organizing because I forget everything. So I have the app on my phone. I have the desktop, not application, but the browser, and it's always open in my tab. And I just essentially have a few different tabs, like personal topics I want to talk about, computer science related topics I want to talk about, software development topics I want to talk about. And every time I get an idea, I put it in there. And then whenever I create that, I move it over to my live video section, basically those that I've already uploaded. So I have a backlog of many videos. And then if I have more of an idea of what to make within each video, I just add that into the little section of, you know, I want to make a video about X, but then I kind of maybe script it out or maybe just kind of wing it, maybe bullet points of what I want to talk about.
Okay. And last question about this.
Sure.
What made you want to do videos rather than another kind of content type? Because, right, you could write blog articles, you could do podcasting, you could just do like short videos on, you know, Instagram or something. What made you go to YouTube?
What really made me go to YouTube is this fellow that I watched a few videos, Gary Vaynerchuk. Now, if someone out there doesn't like cussing, don't listen to this guy. He just doesn't have a very polite mouth, if you will, but he is polite. I had this internship at it was at NASA, and it was kind of like a almost mundane task. So basically what I did in my spare time was listen to YouTube videos, watch YouTube videos, and he was one. And him talking about YouTube and all of this essentially was what got me into it. And I just love the idea of making videos. I really enjoy the process of editing the videos and making the thumbnails. And I feel like all of that that I'm able to put into that really allows me a creative outlet. And that's kind of why I continue to do it.
Awesome. Well, I tip my hat to you because that's the one thing I really find very tedious is like the video editing. I'm trying to ease into it, but I just use Instagram and they're like 10 second videos and I don't really do any editing. So that's something I admire. I like people with the video editing skills, and it's something, I mean, not that you need any more skills. You're already a software engineer, but I feel like it's also something that you can always use in lots of ways, whether it's for yourself or for other people, you know, down the road.
I'm going to have to reverse that on you and say, I tip my hat to you because I don't think I'd be able to have guests on every week or every month or however often on a podcast. I feel like I would just always be nervous. I don't know. Cause I get nervous in interactions like this.
Well, thank you. It's really weird. I've talked about this before on the show, but for the podcast, I'm like fine, but I actually really don't like public speaking.
Yeah.
And I do get kind of like social anxiety, I guess you could call it, before going to like certain events, like networking events or something.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So it is kind of weird. And also I don't like live, like the live video. This isn't live, obviously,
sure.
Right? Like these aren't live. I think everyone knows that. So there is like some kind of layer there, but anything that is live sort of stresses me out. But I hope to do more stuff in the future, like doing some live video. Cause I do think it's a great way to communicate and like educate people, but I need to start build up the courage to do that.
No, if you need it, all the courage you can get, just watch some of my early videos and you'll see how horrible I was in front of the camera. Didn't know anything about lighting or how to talk to a camera. Cause I'm very much of a feedback oriented person. I like to talk to people like this conversation instead of just talk to a camera and I talk the whole entire time. So it was definitely something to get used to. And I still don't even think I'm quite there yet, but I'm working on it every day.
Well, I feel like the few videos I watched of yours that were more recent, I thought you looked like very professional and like a natural.
I
so you're definitely coming along. I do believe, because my early blog posts and all my early stuff, I just like cringe when I look at it.
Yeah, but I don't even
that's look just, at my yeah. stuff. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I've taken down a few articles or I've like redirected them somewhere else or something. Cause I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? When I wrote that? And it's not like, I mean, it's embarrassing to me. Maybe other people wouldn't think it was that embarrassing, but I don't know. It's just,
yeah, it's a different outlook on things. I have a few private videos, so I know the feeling.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much, Forrest, for coming on. Where can people find you online? What's your YouTube channel?
I appreciate you having me. My YouTube channel is my name, Forrest Knight, or youtube.com/fknight. My first initial, last name. And that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
that's our show. Thanks for tuning in. For a recap or to browse through other episodes and show notes, head on over to learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you like tech-related content like this podcast, make sure to sign up for my email list. You can do so easily right on the homepage at learntocodewith.me. There's a big sign-up form right at the top. I'll send you new blog posts, tell you about time-limited course deals, and much more. It was great to have you with me today. Join me next week for another episode.